Yeah, baby. My name is Randy Reeves, and I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be here and sober this evening, and sincerely hope that what is said and read here tonight will keep us sober till we lay our heads down. Okay. Has anybody found any keys? There's some missing keys. Imagine that. Fortunately, I don't think it's me today. Okay. We'll start with the Serenity Prayer to open the meeting. The we version. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All right. And acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life, unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as on what needs to be changed in me and in my attitudes. So again, I'm Randy, I'm an alcoholic. I have the privilege to be your chairperson, H&I chairperson for District 52. And I'm grateful. It's a big part of my life. It has enhanced my sobriety, and I've met wonderful people because of that. And I'm grateful you all are here, and I'm grateful for these individuals here that are coming to share their story. And we're gonna start out with John.
I'm John, I'm an alcoholic. I got Jack, this is 2:30 already. Never mind. I'm going over anyway, so it doesn't matter. John, alcoholic. Thank you for being here today. Thanks for having us. Thank you, Randy and Don and the committee that puts on this event. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I did 3, 4, 5 years of my sobriety here in Santa Maria. And it's kind of funny. On my way to Santa Maria, I moved here in 2004, I think, maybe 6, 7, 8 years sober. And on my way here, the H&I committee from North County called me and said, we have a couple of commitments we'd like you to fill. And I don't even have a place to live yet. And they're giving me commitments. And I loved it. It's absolutely perfect. It's just exactly the way it's supposed to be. I can't figure that out, God can. And first of all, did you see us laughing? I believe the laughter is some of the most important medicine there is in Alcoholics Anonymous. That we get to have fun here. And because before I got here, the fun was over. You know, I'd laugh if I thought you had what I wanted, but that was the only reason, because it just wasn't funny or fun anymore, you know. And in 1996, I went to jail 8 times, and every time I get out of jail on Monday morning and go to the bar and call the connection, and then I'd go back to jail. I mean, I went back to jail the next day twice. And I wasn't laughing, but it is funny now that I look back on it. It's just got to be normal. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization for me was when I realized that it was okay to go to jail. It didn't bother me anymore. They're gonna let me out on Monday, probably, or Tuesday. You know, they're gonna let me out, and I'm gonna get to get what I need, and in between, then maybe I get a shower, because I hadn't done that for a while. And the last time I got out of jail in 1997, I called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I said, I'm really sick, can you please help me? And I haven't been back to jail in 29 years. That's a pretty good deal. I came up, right? I'd take that deal right now. And I think one of the biggest differences is, I'll tell you that it was because I went to jail. I'll tell you it was because I went to meetings. I believe most of it is an inside job. It was the darkness and the misery in my soul, that cold, lonely feeling. Because I got used to going to jail. And if it was jail, why wouldn't it be the first time or the third time? But I just got so sick in here that I couldn't take it anymore. And when that happened, Alcoholics Anonymous showed up at the facility where I was locked up. You guys brought us a meeting inside Ventura County Jail, and I'd never seriously been to a meeting before, ever, and I wasn't going because I wasn't an alcoholic, and they made us all go. And I remember sitting over on one side or the other, trying to listen a little bit and trying to make sure nobody saw me listening. I didn't want that peer pressure thing to kick in. I want anybody to know that I might be an alcoholic or that I might be trying to get out of this mess, you know? So I got out of jail in 1997. I called Alcoholics Anonymous and I asked them, can you please help me? And my first sponsor was a guy by the name of Tommy, who was an H&I guy who came into the facilities where I was locked up. I got so sick of listening to Tommy, I was going to quit drinking, so I didn't have to listen to him anymore. Because he came every week, and he told, sometimes twice a week, and he told the same story over and over again. And there's, you know, which seemed to indicate he might be telling the truth. Because I couldn't tell you the same story over and over again, because that might be my lie, or my last lie, or the lie I can't remember that I told you last time, but whatever I have to do to get through the next day. And Tommy was my sponsor. We went to Starbucks every day at 11 o'clock, and I thought you had to go to Starbucks to get sober. Every Monday at 11 o'clock, and we began to read the book, and we began to do what it says to do in the book. We read the book from cover to cover, and when it says to do something, we did it. When it says to pray, we prayed. When it says to write, we wrote. And then we'd go to a meeting, you know. And after a little while, it became very clear that the next indicated thing was sharing this with another human being. That Tommy had felt like he was uniquely qualified to sponsor me because he had been to jail and gotten out and stayed out. And I began to feel like I was uniquely qualified to sponsor the next guy who got out because I stayed out for a few days, you know. I remember sitting in a meeting at a place near my house and looking over, and this guy's got on shower shoes from Ventura County Jail with his booking number on the bottom. I'm supposed to talk to that guy. I need to go, you know. I know how he feels right now. He just got out. And I believe that we are uniquely qualified to go do that next interview. You know, since then I've been involved in H&I from the very beginning. This is an H&I panel, this is an H&I event, and I'm grateful for that. There's a bunch of people here that I'm regularly involved with in H&I. There's a couple people here that I met while they were inside the walls of prison. And to come here and sit with them in this room today is a dream come true. It's complete and total magic. There's no, you can't add those two things up and end up here today and they, here we are. And I'm please don't tell them that I did not save their souls, because I've been telling them that for a long time, you know. But it's hard to describe that joy, right? Hard to describe that. The first part, just seeing somebody, I was in a meeting the other day and heard somebody call my name, and it was a guy who got out 6 days ago, and I'd known him from the inside. It's the joy, talk about the sickness being an inside job, the solution then becomes an inside job too. It's the love and the fullness, the impossible dreams come true kind of thing. So currently, we were at Southern California Men's Colony last night. We're taking a panel into the East Wing, and I've been doing that for 15, 16, 17 years now. The way I measure success in H&I is we haven't had a dark night there in I can't remember the last one. It's been years and years and years. We show up and we've done what we're supposed to do there. There were no meetings during COVID, but that wasn't us. We would have showed up. And the kind of people who make that happen are the kind of people I want to hang out with. Hang out with the winners, you know, and there's a bunch of people. With the mudslides in Montecito one year, they told us we were never going to get to CMC, you know, because the road was closed. So we went around to Bakersfield to get to the California Men's Colony in San Luis Obispo. We took a 2-hour trip and turned it into a 4-hour trip, and then we had to drive home. But there was no dark night that night. And I'm also involved at the Long Hope Federal Correctional Complex. I'm a volunteer at the Ventura County Jail. We have a couple of transitional living homes for parolees where I live. So that's how we get to meet these guys when they first get out. This isn't supposed to happen, right? I'm currently involved in 2 female firefighter camps. And one of them is in the ladies are in custody. They're still serving their sentences. They've earned the privilege of going to fire camp and the opportunity to become firefighters. And they, you know what? They kick ass. They have the most enthusiasm for Alcoholics Anonymous that I've ever been around. There's a group of ladies there who want to do better. And at this point in time, there's a second facility that's developed to offer those same. So those girls eventually finish their sentence, right? You know what? It doesn't matter what gender they are, because it's true for the men's fire camps as well. They finish their sentence and they leave on parole. But their opportunity to become a firefighter doesn't end anymore, because they now have an opportunity to go to a firefighter training center for formerly incarcerated male or female firefighters. And they want us to bring Alcoholics Anonymous in. It's pretty hard to be a drunk, formerly incarcerated male firefighter, right? So anyway, I'm doing my 10 minutes. I love this stuff, and I really appreciate you guys being here, and thank you very much.
Victor, alcoholic?
Victor!
All right, so I got 20 minutes. So, I guess I'm going to start off by talking about what it looked like going from that hopeless place that I was in to the hopeful place that I'm in today. You know, I didn't know about myself by any means. I mean, it took a room full of you guys to, you know, pull me out of the mud, out of the darkness, and into a place where, I'm living a productive life, right? From an early age, right, alcohol and drugs and criminality and all of that was just a normal part of my existence, right, from my father to, you know, all my relatives, right, it's what I understood and it's what I embraced, and it took me into the prison system, like, from an early age, right, the youth authority to juvenile camps to serving 2 life sentences in the correctional facilities, and I would spend 25 years just, you know, Most of the time, like, in dysfunction, just lost. And I didn't have much care, right? Like, I'd given up hope in my life. And I believed that I was one of those throwaway people, right? Somebody that didn't matter, that you could, you know, move on to the next grade or kick out of the next school or move on to the next, you know, youth camp or to the next prison and to the next jail cell and to the next, you know, destructive situation, and I justified that. You know, I acted in accordance with all that. You know, with all that I came into contact with, right? Like, you know, you wanted to lock me up, I was going to give you a reason to lock me up. You know, like, you thought I was a, you know, just a mess, or I behaved as a mess. Right? And my one skill then, right, was alcohol. You know, I could numb out most of what I was going through. You know, most, you know, shitty situations that I would put myself in, you know, I'll drink it away, right? A bad relationship, I'll drink it away, right? Get to, you know, a prison cell. Well, you know what? It's not that bad. I'll drink it away. I'll drink it away. And it's what I did. I,
you know, I started off in 1998, and you know, I'm just this little kid. And I was a kid back then, and now I know as a grown man, I can see myself as that ignorant, scared little kid. But I walked in with, you know, my chest out and my head up, and you know, afraid as I could be. But outside, I presented something different. And you know, in prison, you know, you present that, they're gonna make you live up to that, and that would eventually start the downward spiral for me. You know, they would lock me in segregated housing units, and I would spend a number of years there. And you know what? Seemed like every place that I got, right, I found that one skill that I could use to kind of lighten the situation, right? I couldn't see my family. You know, I would make all these little makeshift breweries, right? Give me an apple, I'll make a cup of wine, right? Give me a grapefruit, give me anything, right? Give me a potato. And I'll turn it into something that I could get so intoxicated with that, you know, everything else would just drift away into a place where, you know, I became what I saw, right? Just, you know, I saw darkness and I became a part of it. I, you know, would go on and, you know, and finally, like 2000, I would say 17, and I already lost track of the time, so you guys are gonna have to stop me. So in 2017, I'm in Calipatria, and it's hot as hell down there, man. It's so ugly. It's 104 degrees in the morning, and it just gets hotter throughout the day. And I was there just miserable. One of the most miserable times, you know, me being in prison. And this is 17. I think I had been in prison 18, 19 years at that point. And I get a call from the counselor, right? The counselor is like, you know, your guidance counselor. She's, you know, he or she is the one that tells you your programming, you know, what you're gonna do, what's expected of you, and yada, 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 right? But I don't talk to the counselors, I don't talk to the cops, you know, because at this point I was already, you know, a pretty hardened criminal. And so I just, you know, don't really have any communication for any of these people, right? And she calls me in and she says, hey, you know, you're summoned and we need to talk to you, and you know, we got some bad news. I said, oh, okay. You know, just real tough, real shitty, but inside, you know, still the same scared person, just a little bit older. And she says, well, your dad died. And I could feel the blow in my chest, but I just didn't want to give her, you know, didn't want to respond to her, right? Because I knew somewhere deep in my mind that this was like somebody that I don't talk to. I don't want to communicate with her. I definitely don't want to share my grief with her. But I'm hurting inside, I'm broken. My dad was an alcoholic. You know, his dad was an alcoholic. His dad died of cirrhosis, my dad died of cirrhosis, and I was on the same road. For sure, I was gonna, you know, be the third, you know, of a long line of alcoholics that, you know, to lose their life to the drink. But she's telling me about this, and she's looking at me, and I could see now that, like, she was just a really sweet lady, and she just wanted to, like, let me know what was happening in my life, and, you know, if I needed help or whatever. But I just thought, all right, cool, okay. And I'm just keeping a hard face, and she's telling me, well, your dad died. I said, all right, okay. And I'm just dismissing her, like, okay, man, all right. And I turn to walk out, and she stops me. She says, hey, like, you don't gotta be so hard. You know, you don't gotta be so hard. And she's just trying to show me some compassion, you know, just letting me know that I was a human, that I had value, that I wasn't what I thought I was. And I still just couldn't let it down. I just told her, all right, man, thank you. And I walked out. I remember walking out of there feeling the weight of that on my chest and just broken, man, like a piece of me broke inside. I love my dad, and he was like he was my buddy, you know, not so much like a father, but just a friend, right? Like, we would get drunk together, we would go get in fights together, I committed my first crime with my dad, right? And it was dysfunctional, but I loved him, and he was my dad. And I get back to my prison cell, and I got the solution for this, for sure, right? You know, drinking will take everything away. I don't have to think about this, right? I don't have to think about that. I'm never coming home, and I'm never gonna put my arms around my dad. I'm never gonna be able to, you know, sit down to dinner with him. And I get back to my cell. I don't talk to my cellie about it. I don't talk to anybody about it. I just bury it down. I get drunk. And I walk out. I think it was later that day. You know, I'm out of the prison yard, right? In Calipat, there's like 1,000 dudes on the yard, sweaty. We're just tired and whooped out from the sun. And it hits me right there like a brick in the head, right? I get out there. There's 1,000 dudes on the yard. And I don't have one person that I could talk to. 1,000 dudes out there. I haven't got one person on the planet that I could talk to. And I realized how alone I was. And that fear and that just that sadness just started creeping in on me. I felt the walls closing. And up until that point, man, I felt like I was just made out of Teflon. And I don't know what to do, but I know the fucking tears are coming, man. And I'm not a crier. So I don't know what it's going to come out like. It might just be ugly with boogers. And I don't know what's going to happen, right? So I make my way, right? I don't know where I'm going. And there's like dividing fences, security fences. And I'm just trying to get somewhere where I don't have to show these dudes how hurt I am and how afraid I am and how lost I am. You know, because I've been presenting this image of myself for so long that I don't even know what it looks like to be human again. So I get to this door and it's open and I don't go in prison. I don't know if you're, you know, those of you that know, those of you that don't, like programming is when you go to school, you get a job, you do this. I don't do none of that. I don't go to school. I don't get no job. I don't do what the cops want me to do. I don't do what anybody wants me to do. You give me a write up, you give me do whatever you want to do. I didn't care. Because I'm going from the yard to the hole, from the hole to the shoe, and that's going to be the cycle for me. So I get to this door, and I don't even know what's behind this door, but I got to get off this yard, and I bust through the door, and it's a chapel. Right? I had never been in there, and I was just like, oh. And the chaplain sees me, and he just looks at me, he doesn't simply say anything, he just opens another door and lets me in. And I get in there, and I'm by myself, and it just comes out like an ocean. And I'm crying, and I don't know how long I was crying for. You know, I've shared this story in the past, but man, it could have been like a minute or an hour or 2 hours. But I was just, man, it all came out, like, you know, 18, 19 years of just holding it in. It came out, and I felt exhausted, man. You know, for those of you that don't really cry a lot, you get a good cry out, man, it's tiring. You get something to eat after that. It was like swimming, man. I was exhausted. I was like, oh, look, I get out of there, and I make it back to my cell. That I don't even remember that dude's face. I remember his name. I don't know nothing about him, but I could see him in my mind, right? Like he saved me that day. I get back to my cell and I just I don't know what else to do. So I lock in. I do the same thing, right? I just start drinking it up again and just continuing the same thing, right? I'm selling dope on the yard and I'm, you know, just being the same person, right? And it feels fake to me now, right? I don't feel the same. I don't feel as confident as I did, you know, the day before that. And I feel like I'm just like, I'm lost again. And now it's just present. It's there. I'm wearing it like a coat and I'm thinking that everybody can see this now. Right, I don't have that same energy where I want to get out to the yard and I want to make the next deal. I want to get the next cup of white line and I want to get into the next riot. I don't want to do any of that. I'm just tired. And I stumble on like that for another like almost 2 years, just faking it, just trying. And that same counselor that called me in, she calls me in again and she's just like, bro, you are some kind of stupid. Like, you need help. And they say that, you know, like our higher power, right? Or my higher power will send these people in my way, right? They're like angels, right? And I'm sure that she was, right? Because she said mercy. She hit me on top of the head and she said, you need a group. You need to go somewhere else. And she put me in this, I think it was an NA, she put me in an NA group. And I had no idea what the 12 steps were. I had no idea what programming was, but I was like, okay, man, I'll do it. And now I'm the dope man on the yard. And she puts me in a Narcotics Anonymous group. I said, this is perfect, right? So I'm selling drugs and NA, and I'm making all the transactions. I got all my customers all in one place. It's good. Life's good. So she, you know, and the whole time she knows, right? Like I could see her. She's sitting there and she's looking at me, and I'm looking at her. And she knows, like, you know what? You are just a slow poke, man. And finally she tells me, she says, listen, something has changed, right, within the prison system where you, whatever prison yard you're on, a 1, 2, 3, 4, it's all based off of a point system. And she says, well, you know, you can go to a lower level prison. By this time I had been on a 4-yard for 20 years. And I spent 20 years on a 4-yard. I just couldn't figure it out in my head. I had like 290 points. And I was never gonna get to a lower level yard. It just like, I needed like 40 points to get to a level 3. So she said, man, like you can go. You're just so stupid. You need me to push you. And I was just like, yes. And she said, you wanna go? I said, absolutely, I wanna go. Like, I'll go. You know, and I had no idea what was in store or what the next prison was gonna look like. I only knew what I knew. And I knew what I needed to do to quiet these insecurities, quiet these, you know, these fears that I had, and just to be okay. I just needed to get drunk until I passed out. I needed to fucking go make more madness happen. And that's all I had. It was just a rewind, repeat, and it was insanity. So she sends me out of there, and I go from Calipat to California Men's Colony, right? And California Men's Colony, man, is a beautiful place. You know, it's like they got, you know, to say prison's a beautiful place, it's no prison's beautiful, but that place was like, you know, a safe haven for me, man. They sent me over there, and there was a tree right in the middle of the yard. Man, I had 20 years I hadn't seen a tree. And I was just like, oh my God, I gotta touch this tree. Like, I wanted to touch this tree so bad, just to like feel the bark. Like, oh man, I'm gonna go touch this tree. Like, it's probably worth like it was amazing to me. It was amazing to me. So I get there and I start, right? Like, I still don't know what to do. I still don't know how to put one foot in front of the other. And I mean, if not for, you know, the people that were coming into the prisons, right, the H&I, if not for the guys that were carrying the message and the women that were carrying the message, right, like, I would still be in there. I'd probably be dead. I would have probably, you know, forfeited my life. But, yeah, 5 minutes? All right, I got 5 minutes. So one of the guys that first introduced me to AA said, hey, man, you can go in there, and there's a different way. And I said, fuck that. I'm not doing that. Yeah, that's for nerds. Like, I'm not doing none of that. And he said, there's coffee in there. I said, coffee? I said, all right, I'll do it. Right? I'll do it. No coffee? Absolutely. All prisoners love coffee. So I get in there, and now I'm sipping coffee, and I'm like, these guys are fucking corn dogs. And I'm sipping the coffee, but I'll come back for the coffee, though, for sure. And little by little, man, I start hearing it, right? Like, one word seeps in, then another word seeps in. And finally, like, I'm just in, like, it's like reading a good book. I'm like, oh my God, like, what are they gonna share next? Like, what's gonna happen, right? How does this shit work? I'm sitting in the front, and I go from there to becoming the secretary of the meeting, trying to get any commitment I could in the meeting, man. Like, I'll set chairs up, I'll make coffee, I'll do anything you guys need me to do, you know, because this is, like, I could see this light at the end of the tunnel. And I still got a life sentence at this point. The court had taken one away, and still sitting there, and I don't think I'm ever gonna get out of prison. But I'm working a program now, right? My sponsor was coming into the prison, and just was my sponsor today. It wasn't then, but man, I could just see it, and it's good. And life is getting better. And even though I know I'm gonna spend the rest of my life in this place, like, in my mind, I get a letter telling me, hey man, you know what? You're gonna go to a parole board hearing, and I'm just like, what is this? A couple years later, I'm sitting in front of a parole board, you know, and they're asking me, like, well, how did I make this dramatic change? Going from this person that was just assaulting people and selling drugs and just living a life of chaos. Like, how did I? And I told them, man, I work a program today. This is what I do, right? I work a program, I get out of myself, I help others, and everything that I was saying, I could hear the principles and all, like, everything that we were talking about. And I knew that this is how I got out of prison. This is how I was able to get back to my family. This is how I'm able to live a life like that's hopeful today. With the ups and the downs and everything that's there, like, you know, I give thanks to AA, I give thanks to the H&I people that are willing to go in there, right, and pull somebody out of the mud, somebody like me. Because I know today that there are no throwaway people. I know that we all have value, we all have worth, right? So whenever I get an opportunity, whenever my sponsor tells me that we're going to go speak or we're going to go show up, well, you know what? You did it for me. So thank you. So I got off of parole last week.
Woo! Yeah, good job.
You were too far. Mackenzie, alcoholic. Thank you so much, Donna, for asking me to speak here today. Your story was incredibly amazing to hear. And you were amazing to hear all of these. So my journey to H&I was definitely a little bit different, but of the same similarities. When I was growing up, alcohol and drugs were a huge part of my life, and how I got introduced to being around correctional facilities was my mom being incarcerated. From a young age, I was that one child going in during visitation hours at 12, 13 years old, visiting my mom because she was doing a 6-month term or a 9-month term or a year term. And so going to jails for me was pretty normal. And then the drugs and the alcohol started progressing in my life. And I remember, like, the first time I took a drink, I definitely drank alcoholically. The problem with me is when I drink drug, I become a criminal. And I started getting incarcerated the second I turned 18. In and out of jails, in and out of institutions, being sentenced to rehabs. And during all of this time, like before I turned 21, I thought it was just fun. I thought, whatever, I'm just drinking. I'm just having a good time. Like, so sorry I was too drunk in public. So sorry I was drinking and driving. Like, they're just, you know, there's no problem to it. Because of the fact that that's what my mom used to do. So it was instilled into my brain that it's just a slap on the wrist and then we continue on with our lives. Until I met, unfortunately, my drug of choice, meth. And I was 21 years old. I met the father of my two children and started using drugs pretty regularly. Now, which is pretty cool to be here in Santa Maria today. I grew up here, didn't get sober here, but I've never participated in any AA, NA, none of those A's while I lived here. So it's pretty cool to be back here today and be able to speak with you guys and to share my story. So running around the streets of Santa Maria with my children's father was very abusive. I was in and out of the judicial system due to fighting with him. I remember being pregnant with my first daughter. And I got arrested, found out I was pregnant with her, got out, was supposed to go to a TC house here in Santa Maria. Obviously, I didn't want to go, could not stop using drugs while I was pregnant with her either. I could not catch that break. I went on the run and ended up having to get taken back in by probation, and they gave me a max out term, which meant I had to finish out the rest of my probation while being incarcerated, while being pregnant. So I did about 5.5 months while I was pregnant, and I still had to do 4 months post that. Now during that time, I was kind of sad because there was all these drugs, all this alcohol, all of this was going on around me, but I knew I had to go to the doctor twice a week and I couldn't drink or use drugs. So I was like fighting each and every day to be inside that jail cell. Pregnant with a child I wasn't sure I even wanted to have. gave birth to my daughter, and let me tell you, at that moment in time, I thought I was going to stay sober for the rest of my life. It was the most beautiful experience I'd ever experienced. Even though I was holding a CO's hand while giving birth to my first child, and she had never had kids before, so we were both freaking out. it was something that I thought I was going to turn my life around and change, and I thought I could do it all on my own. I didn't know about AA, I didn't know about NA. I thought that this is how I'm going to change my life, my child. This girl is going to change me. And that was 7 years ago. I just turned 4 on Thursday, or 3 on Thursday. So 4 years of changing all of that. Obviously, she wasn't the solution to my problem. So I had my daughter. I was in the middle of reunification with her, doing what I was supposed to do while still getting intoxicated. I knew how to pass a drug test for CWS. I was going on my visits with my daughter, trying to show I was changing my life. I was actually living a double life. checking into probation. I was like, I got this, you know? This disease doesn't have me, nor did I know it was a disease back then. Didn't think I had a problem. Today I know it's a disease of alcoholism progressing in my life. on her first birthday, I was gonna have her for my first overnight. And I ended up, I was pregnant again, shocker. And I ended up going into labor with my son. Now, they share a birthday a year apart on the same day. So I remember calling my worker being like, hey, I'm in the hospital. I cannot have my daughter overnight. Something you can't do at the hospital is lie, cheat on a drug test. So I was, my son, his toxicologies came back okay, but the meconium was showing in the umbilical stat that I had used drugs. So I knew CWS was gonna come and have a conversation with me, and I was like freaking out that this was going to affect my daughter because they put my son in the NICU for 5 days. He had fluid in his lungs and they were just monitoring him. That was the saddest birth I had given. My baby's father didn't even show up and I gave birth by myself. Just goes to show that what drugs and alcohol can produce and decide in someone and what really matters to him, the drugs and the alcohol mattered more than the birth of his son. 5 days later, I went home because I couldn't get a hold of him. And I remember walking in there 5 days after giving birth, and probably the most tragic thing happened to me. And this is where my alcoholism really took off. That man did not think that was his child, and pistol whipped me and locked me in a closet for 2 weeks. At that point, on paper, I have surrendered my son at the hospital. I lose my daughter in the midst of all of that. What do I have to live for? Who do I have to live for? And I went on this run for the next 4 years of in and out of the incarceration system. H and I would come in, I wouldn't even look at these people because you guys are crazy, want nothing to do with you. I was just so caught up in myself because I did not want to process the fact of what I had done to 2 children. Today, I'm so grateful for those CWS workers. Today, I'm so grateful my children have never seen me loaded. I'm so grateful my children never had to be put in that lifestyle that I was living. But that doesn't stop there. I get with somebody else. I get pregnant for the third time. This third child showed me that this is when I was really going to change my life. I actually got sober this time, all on my own willpower. Never once stepped into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because anytime I was sentenced to program, I would go, but I wouldn't listen to anything you guys had said. And I would end up running for the program within 3 days because this wasn't for me. I couldn't see the good side of what could come of being in these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had my daughter in January of 2022, and due to the fact of having 2 other children taken in the last 3 years, they took her from me with no chance of reunification. The same night I gave birth to her is the same night I tried taking flight with an officer in the inside of the hospital bedroom, and I left the hospital, put a needle in my arm. That was the first time I ever put a needle in my arm so quickly after giving birth. I had at least waited and was breastfeeding. No, it was done. I went on a run so I got sober in December of that year. In January of that year to December of that year, I lived each day like I was gonna die the next day. I would lie, steal, cheat, rob. And thankfully on December 4th of 2022 is when my life changed. I got arrested for the very last time. And I thought I was gonna go in there, they're gonna let me out in a few days. I'm not on probation. But no, they held me in there for 82 days. And then during this 82-day period, H and I came in again. I got involved with the Sheriff's Treatment Program. And somebody in the Sheriff's Treatment Program happens to be one of us. And that woman came and spoke to me. Her husband's a pastor inside the Santa Barbara County Jail. He came and talked to me. I remember I still have the Bible to this day that he gave me. I still have the AA book she gave me to this day. And during this period, AA wasn't as frequently coming, but she came and saw me every single day. She's who still allows us into the jails to this day. And when that woman came to me, I remember the following week an H&I panel came in, and I was looking at going to prison for 6 years. I had done something got arrested, and it was, I was like, all right, let's do it. Like, I was ready to buckle down for 6 years because I did not want to stay sober. Like, that wasn't in the cards for me. And she's like, Mackenzie, fill out this application. Let's go to rehab. And I looked at that girl on the H&I panel, and I'm like, no. Like, why would I want to change my life? What do I have to offer to this world? I've now lost 3 children. My family doesn't talk to me. I have nobody. I might as well just do the time and get out. And something happened. The next week she came in. I had gone to court. I had a court, though. And that's when I'm like, well, they said I'd either take the 6 years or take it to trial. I knew I was going to lose in trial. It was all on camera what I did. And I said, fine, I'll fill it out. Now, the consistency and the way that these women come into these H&I panels and be able to share their story and show you that there is somebody out there who cares about you, because I had nobody. I wasn't calling anybody from the jail. I wasn't talking to nobody. My family didn't even know if I was dead. And I ended up going to that rehab that she told me to. I went to the judge the following week, and they said, we will allow you to go to this 1 year rehab if you complete it successfully. We'll take all your felonies and drop them to misdemeanors. I wanted to go back into these jails so bad after getting out. I thought about running from the rehab because that's what I've known how to do, but something changed. I got something that's called a sponsor, somebody with working knowledge of the 12 steps, and I started reading the book. I started identifying. Now, even though my alcohol of choice might not just be only alcohol, I stopped looking at the differences. I started looking at the similarities, the thinking, the perspective change. And through that entire process, I had this thing they call a spiritual experience. And by the time I graduated my rehab and was out in sober living, I was sponsoring women. And I was trying so hard to get off probation. I remember, first time ever, paid off all my probation fines. They let me off of probation a year and a half early. I remember 3 weeks after getting off probation, I was telling Jane, who helps us get into the jails today, I really want to apply to get into the jails. I want to go give back what was given to me. So now on Tuesday nights, I get to go into the Santa Barbara County Jail, visit the same jail cells that these women used to come visit me in. And let me tell you, I work in treatment, I work in sober living. Nothing gives me the gratification that I get by giving some hope to these women who might not have any. Being that person that in the middle of the night, if they're getting released, they're able to call me, and I'm the one who goes to pick them up and make sure they get somewhere safe. H&I holds such a dear part in my heart, and the women that I get to go in there with, there are some men who go in there with us to the men's tanks as well. There's no words for it. It's so amazing and so gratifying to see. I have a few girls who are now outside, and you know, yes, I do some, but like, I still talk to all of them, whether they're doing great or doing bad. Like, they all have my cell phone number. I'm able to work with them on a different level than I was able to on the inside walls. Some of them get to come to the rehab I work at. Some of them end up in sober living I work at. You know, it's pretty cool to see how this goes full circle, you know? But I'm very grateful to be here, and thank you.
Let's give it up for our fantastic panel. Well, there's some people out here. I'd like Brother Roderick Mitchell stand up for us. Another success story that some of us got to carry the message to, and now today, Miss Brother Mitchell and myself were out playing, well, he wasn't playing yet, but I was playing in a tournament, and he came out and walked with us all for 3 hours. And he's another success story, and he's here doing it. Thank you, Brother Mitchell, for being here. And I want to thank all the people that are involved. A lot of you out there, you do things. We all, H&I is just my jam. It's something that I just said yes to. And the run of sobriety that I have now, it's all attributable to my service in H&I. I want to thank Nancy. Is Nancy here? Nancy is our handles all the literature. She's the district general service. She has a beautiful little office, her and all of her volunteers. She gets out so much literature because I want to think when you guys contribute to Alcoholics Anonymous in any way, most of you know a part of that is sent to H&I. This is a byproduct of what we do. And Nancy plays a huge role. I'm talking to her all the time. Getting literature because we get this, we get requests and we get it out there. So I want to thank you all. We're all a part of that because some of us, like has been shared, we're working now. We have jobs because we're in recovery and we get to contribute to those that aren't able to contribute. So I want to thank you all. We're all a part of that. And I want to thank John for carrying the message for so long. Victor again and Mackenzie, what a wonderful story. Victor, I got to years ago build a relationship just like Brother Mitchell here inside and to hug somebody when they get out and see them and be there to bridge the gap. Let's circle up.